Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Rick Carlin, who covers the state capitol for the Albany Times-Union. A reform ski bum, he has previously covered education, consumer affairs, and features at the Times-Union. Before working at the Times-Union, he worked at newspapers in Maine, where he covered the state capitol, and Colorado, where he covered the energy industry and natural resource issues. Welcome, Rick Carlin.
You bet. How are you, Alan?
It's good. It's good. Yeah. So tell us about the PEF fight. Now, setting this up, I just want to give a little background here. There are two major unions, civil service unions, in the state. One is the civil service, CSEA, and that's the larger union, and they have all the blue-collar jobs. And then the white-collar union, by and large, there are some exceptions to this, is the PEF, or the Public Employees Union, Employees Federation.
Correct.
The PEF and the governor have never gotten along all that well because I think, well, neither union has gotten along all that well with this governor anyway. But the PEF, the white-collar guys, so many of them went to college. They all have something to say. They throw out their leaders on a regular basis, as opposed to the CSEA, the blue-collar union, which doesn't do that. So now there's this big fight going on, and it was all set up how? Because didn't PEF get the governor angry at some point?
Well, the leadership of PEF has been getting the governor angry. You know, the leaders of both PEF and CSEA, PEF is Susan Kent, CSEA is Danny Donahue. For the last several years, they've really amped up the rhetoric because they had some really tough contracts that they're living through right now. They had several years without raises. They've had to swallow higher health care costs. And Susan Kent was actually elected. We're going on 3 years ago. She was elected on a sort of a throw the incumbents out movement. Ken Bernion got the membership to approve their current contract. But there was a faction within PEF that said, you know, we'd rather take the layoffs than take a bad payoff. Because at the time, the governor was threatening there could have been about 3,000 layoffs if they didn't take the terms of this tough contract. So there was a big division within the union. A lot of it fell along the lines of how senior people were. The people who were more senior who wouldn't get laid off were pretty happy that they would say, oh, take the layoffs. Let's hold out for a better contract. The younger members, not so much. So the leadership of PEF, Susan Kent, the president, you know, she was swept into office on a wave of unhappiness with the former leadership. And I think the cue to her was, get tough with the governor, fight back. And we've seen that in the rhetoric. And then we also saw a culmination of that of sorts in September when the union decided to endorse Cuomo's primary opponent in the Democratic primary. That's Zephyr Teachout. She's the now famous Fordham Law School professor who actually took on the governor in a Democratic primary. No one really expected her to win from the outset. It was chaotic, but it did, you know, siphon off some votes from the governor in the primary, and especially he was trying to launch a new party, the Women's Equality Party. There was the Green Party. It was a headache that he didn't need, and it was seen as a real open challenge to the governor's leadership. So that's the scenario.
But it couldn't have been that he was trying to get even with them for doing what you're about to tell us about, because he said in his autobiography that he doesn't do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know. That's only the governor knows that for sure. To be fair, these reclassifications, there have always been some reclassifications, but as a contract comes due, I believe there's an 8-month window in which the state can try to reclassify certain jobs. And they're currently fighting over the reclassification of 250 jobs that the governor believes should be MCs, management confidential positions.
Which means, just so our listeners get it, management confidential, you fire at will. You can, right?
It depends on the classification within the management confidential. Some of them can be fired at will. Some of them, it's not that easy. But for the point, I think, of this argument, Alan, they're not PEF members. So they're not dues-paying PEF members. They're not voting PEF members.
Interesting. That's a hell of a punishment.
Yeah, you know, there's a dues factor here.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. So.
Yeah, any union lives on its dues. They need dues to pay the bills and keep the lights on. So they've been fighting over that. The state actually lost that battle in the administrative venue. The Public Employment Relations Board sided on the behalf of the union. The state went to court. They lost in trial court, but I think people expect them to appeal. They have not yet appealed. They have, I think, until January 15th to appeal. And this has been going on since 2013. So one of the larger points here is these reclassification battles. They can drag on for years.
Let's see if we all get the same message here, so we just figure it out. In other words, every so often when a contract comes up, the governor's office can ask that some of the jobs that have civil service protections in PEF are reclassified to this other, more dubious area called management confidential.
Correct.
And I've been getting letters for years from the management confidential people talking about how disgracefully they're all treated, and, you know, because they don't have the same kind of union that the other two do.
Yes. Well, the main thing, the main beef of the management confidentials is they haven't... By and large, with some exceptions, they haven't had an overall contract raise. I think I think it's going on 5 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And they've been working without raises. In some instances, supervisors are earning less money than the people they're supervising, the union people. So at this point in time, people are very reluctant to leave the union, where that you at least get some sort of a step increases in your salary based on longevity and that sort of thing. Some of these MCs have not gotten raises in a long time. That's the main thing. The firing, yeah, there's some of that, but they have some protections.
But let me ask you this, Rick Carlin. Does the fact that unions are generally so unpopular with the American people, polls have shown it, people do it, give, you think, the governor some breathing room when he takes them on this way?
I believe so. If I had to bet, I would suspect that he's polled this issue from time to time. And among the broad electorate, the fact of the matter is there's just not a lot of sympathy out there for public sector unions, for unions in general.
Sure.
But especially for public sector unions. Now, on the other hand, Cuomo has done a lot for the private sector unions. He's been a real friend of the construction, the trade unions and that sort of thing. The Tappan Zee Bridge is a union job. I think there's a broad understanding that these new casinos will be union jobs and the casinos might possibly be union shops. There's a big distinction, and I think the governor's aware of this, between public and private sector unions.
Which is interesting, and, if you think about it for a second, because those unions were pretty strong for Cuomo in the election.
Very much so. I was at the Working Families Convention here when they were trying to get Zephyr Teach out. They went with Cuomo, the Working Families Party. There was a big floor fight, basically, a big battle. Cuomo appeared via video and via phone connection at like 10 o'clock at night, and trying to convince them to go with him. And there was a clear separation there. There was a dichotomy. The people generally in the public sector unions, PEF, the teachers union, another big player, they wanted Zephyr Teach out. They were unhappy with the governor for a lot of reasons. They wanted to make the more ideological move. They wanted to make the statement, if you will, of supporting Zephyr Teach out, who they knew wasn't going to win the Democratic primary. On the other hand, I talked to some people, some, I think, iron workers and electrical workers from downstate. They were squarely behind Cuomo. These guys were saying, look, you know, an ideological statement is nice. We need jobs, and he's delivered for us. And they carried, you know, they carried the day behind the scenes.
And also they gave the party the money they needed to run the party with.
That too. They both, you know, I mean, the teachers' union has a lot of money to pump in the campaigns, as we've seen during the most recent Senate race.
Now, as we speak, Rick Carlin, there is about to be an announcement, which we are not yet privy to, which will say where the casinos are going to go. Now, this is a volunteer group or non-paid group of people who are making these decisions.
Yes.
But as I've often said, politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources.
Mm-hmm.
And if ever we were talking about the allocation of scarce resources, who gets a casino is right up there.
Now, I would say a casino license is a scarce and desirable resource indeed.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Now, the governor's office has been maintaining, we have a hands-off. We don't tell those people who to go and rest of it. Now, okay, good. I like that.
I'm not convinced that. I mean, this is a governor who likes to be in charge. He has a reputation as a micromanager. He wants to know what's going on. He has his views on things, and I would be surprised if there wasn't some at least implicit direction. It's unclear. I haven't really seen any authoritative stories or proof
right.
that that's happened, but there's always back channels and people know each other.
Sure.
And I think in the fullness of time, we'll have a sense of that. But we very well might know who has the casino licenses, yes.
Right. Let's go back to the Moreland Act Commission. Remember that?
Sure.
And,
sure.
You know, then the governor, Ken Lovett, and then the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
and you guys
yeah.
checked in, and it turned out that the second floor, Cuomo's office,
mm-hmm.
was calling in the plays, despite the fact that they maintained it was an independent operation. So why should this be any different?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment, yeah. Yeah, I don't. There's no reason to think that it would be any different. I mean, the governor is the one who pushed through this casino law. You know, got the amendment. You know, pushed, championed the amendment, and I think he wants his voice heard. I mean, there's a lot of interesting questions about these casino licenses in terms of who gets them and where. You know, look, it's safe to say that anyone who's looking for a casino license in New York State is a donor, is donating money. So hopefully, the decision is made on the merits. Or what they think are the merits in terms of what New York State wants to get out of a casino license.
Cash on the barrelhead.
Yeah, but I think they're all doing that. Yeah.
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 Let's talk fracking. Now this is a heck of a subject, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, again, as we sit here and speak, about to be an imminent announcement on the governor's part as
mm-hmm.
to whether or not, after all the studying by the Health Department and the Department of Environmental
mm-hmm.
Conservation, there's going to be whether there is fracking or not. Now, I got to tell you, this is one where he can really get bitten in the posterior
mm-hmm.
no matter what happens, right?
I believe so. Obviously, there's a lot of very well-organized vocal opposition to it. And some of the people are, you know, they're prominent in the Democratic Party. So if he has national aspirations, the governor has to think about that. It's been a real hot-button, third-rail kind of topic in the state. And I think the best evidence by that is that it's taken so long for a decision one way or the other that I think the governor realizes that he's going to get beat up either way.
Well, but I think hydrofracking, we have seen recent polling from Pew and other
yeah.
people that suggests that it's going against the natural inclination of so many of these guys, which
yeah.
is that people don't want to despoil the potentially
mm-hmm.
despoil the water.
Right, the water's the big issue. It uses enormous amounts of water, and there's a lot of concerns, as there should be, about the water table and the water quality. So I think that message has started to sink in with the public. You know, there's another factor, though. If you look at the last time I filled up my car, I think it's down. It's dipping below $3, even in New York State.
No, indeed it is, yeah.
And, you know, if you follow the news, that we're coming up upon what the experts say will be literally a glut of oil. Part of that is, frankly, due to the hydrofracking in other states of the U.S. where we're not importing much oil. But what that means for New York, a lot of these big oil companies, and the small ones too, are less interested in sinking wells in New York State. The market has slowed down. The price is down. A lot of them are no longer chomping at the bit to start drilling for oil or gas in New York State because the prices are just so low.
Call me a cynic, but I think
mm-hmm.
that'll change.
Oh, I think that will change eventually. Any natural resource, it's a cyclical market. It will get expensive once again, for sure. It's just a matter of when.
And you know, I'm thinking that Rick, that this may have a lot to do with his ambitions. There are many people
yeah.
who are now saying that this governor will not run for a third term. He won't make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Third terms are tough.
Mm-hmm.
He had 1 million votes less in this election than he had
mm-hmm.
in his first election.
That's right.
And there are those, particularly some who are close to him, who think he might not do it again, in which case we know which house he has his eye on, and that's
sure.
the White House. and we know that the president of the United States is for fracking. The Democratic president is
yes.
for it.
That's
so
correct.
It might be that he's sort of weighing his where he wins eventually here in making this decision.
He could possibly, I mean, you know, this time around, if he were to go for the White House, clearly the big elephant in the room, so to speak, would be Hillary Clinton.
Well, he won't do that.
Where does she stand?
Sure.
But is this a way for the governor to sort of differentiate himself from Obama?
Well, but he won't run. He won't run for president if Hillary is running, right? I mean,
I don't.
We all assume that.
Yeah,
on the other hand,
yeah.
none other than George Pataki himself is now talking about running for president. I mean, he does that, I think,
yeah, with regularity. And you know, the cynical view there, and a lot of the national pundits say he's just fallen off the radar. He doesn't have the name recognition. Maybe never had the name recognition except for just one brief point in time. You know, the cynical view is he's making the rounds to boost his own campaign accounts. You know, these guys still have campaign coffers that they can fill up with cash, and there's an awful lot of leeway. They can use it for trips and that sort of thing. They can also use it for political favors to support people that they like.
But that's also rational. I also think there's this thing called the fickle finger of fame, and
yeah,
once it touches you and you're out of it, boy, do you miss it.
I think it can get very addictive. The whole game of politics and the ego boost and just being in the spotlight to some people is clearly has an addictive effect, and that could be part of it too. He could be feeling left out. He could be looking at what Cuomo's doing or what Obama's doing and saying, geez, if only I was in there, I could do better. I have ideas. And I think that's, you know, that's human nature.
So let's go to Sheldon Silver.
Okay.
Now there was a big brouhaha over whether the legislators could get a pay raise. And there
right.
are those of us who think, you know, some of them are quite honest. They live on their legislative salaries.
Sure.
But others
sure.
are making a fortune by using their positions in order to get outside work, which they wouldn't get if they weren't in the legislature. It's disgusting. So
rainmakers.
Yes. And so it's disgusting. So what are you seeing and hearing?
I have always been a little bit dubious about the whole pay raise, about whether it's going to happen. And I think if the governor, if Cuomo is going to sign a pay raise, he wants something big and splashy in exchange for that.
Right.
He wants something, either some sort of a limit or real transparency and disclosure on outside income or something like that. And I think that Sheldon Silver and some of the other lawyers also in the Republican Senate conference, they just don't want to do that. They're just making too much money to give that up. They just don't want to go there, especially since they now have the best of both worlds. They're in office and they're making fortunes on the side. Okay, that's the first part. The second part is I've always felt that Dean Skelos, and I'm not a mind reader.
And Dean Skelos, for those listening who might not know, is the Senate leader. Go ahead.
He's the Senate Republican leader.
Right.
The Senate Republicans are outnumbered in New York into the majority in the Senate. And he tends, I think he realizes he needs to play a defensive game to stay in power. They worry that in two years from now, a pay raise could come back to bite them. People could be angry, saying, oh, those bums gave themselves a pay raise. Even if some of the Republicans vote no, it would still, I think they fear that it would look bad, and they'd rather stay in office than get a raise and worry about getting booted out of power in 2 years. That's been my theory.
While we're on that subject, there's many people who think that Hillary running will bring all kinds of people to the polls in 2016.
Correct, yeah.
And that the future of the Republicans in power by a very thin margin will be gone. What do you make of that?
I think that's very true. I mean, look at what happened when Obama. There's a bigger turnout in the presidential years, especially in a blue state like New York. No question. If Hillary, a New Yorker, a Democrat, a woman, runs, you're going to get a lot of Democratic voters at the polls in 2016 who didn't come out this year. There was a low turnout this year. And it's real easy for them just to pull that lever right down the Democratic column. And that spells trouble for the Republicans. They're badly outnumbered in New York. They have barely 32 seat majority. They have just enough people to control the Senate at this point.
Of course, the Democrats behave so badly when they do get into power.
The last time they were in power, it quickly turned into a train wreck. There was the coup where you had people jumping ship and joining the Republicans. There was a huge infighting. Several of them are now in prison, and some more are probably headed for prison. So the Republicans have stayed in power in the Senate to a great extent by capitalizing on the errors and blunders that the New York Senate Democrats have made. as a group.
Now, some of those Republicans, I've often said that while New York State does not have term limits in the legislature, God does. And some of them are getting older.
That's correct. There's a few of them that are into their 80s. Any term could be their last term. So they need to, it's unclear to me what kind of a farm team they've developed. The assembly Republicans, it's a very small number of them. Some of them are potential Senate candidates. They're good candidates. Some are not. And, you know, where's the next crop of up-and-coming Republican senators coming from? I don't see a clear B team there.
Well, I have to say, Rick Garland, that if you're an assembly Republican, which has the power of warm spit, because there are so many Democrats.
Yeah, they have no power.
That if you give them a chance to be in the ruling party in the Senate, they're going to jump ship real fast.
Oh, yeah, but I think, I mean, on the individual level, you know, there's a few of them have done that. George Amador is most notable. He was in the assembly. He was in the Senate. He lost. Now he's back. So there's a few of them. I think if they can, you know, a lot of it, they've got to get the financing together. They've got to get the support together on the ground level in their local party machines and that sort of thing. Okay. And a lot of them are from the upstate rural areas where it's probably, it can be harder to get money together and a machine together.
I'm willing to bet that on Andrew Cuomo's report card, it probably said doesn't play well with others. The reason I'm raising this is that there are two guys, the comptroller and the attorney general. Tom DiNapoli, an immensely nice, decent man, not treated well by Cuomo when Cuomo ran, didn't even endorse him. And Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general, now has asked for extraordinary powers to investigate some of the shootings.
I mean, the relations between, especially, well, we'll start with DiNapoli. It's always been very cool with the governor. He didn't endorse him.
And the governor didn't endorse DiNapoli the first time.
Governor Cuomo did not endorse DiNapoli. He was a fellow Democrat who won this time.
Yeah, but this time he did endorse him.
And he also, he put the screws to him in another way that, you know, there's all this talk about campaign finance reform. And, you know, there was one office this last election that was subject to a matching fund system similar to New York City. Guess who it was? It was Tom DiNapoli.
No.
The governor pushed that through so that the only person who would have to have a matching fund race was Tom DiNapoli. That was widely seen as sort of taking a jab at the comptroller.
Sure, a cynical attack. It was. Yeah. I have no doubt about that. And Schneiderman, who is, we're now thinking that the attorney general is by law now going to be the next governor. Schneiderman obviously has Cuomo looking over his shoulder, yes?
Yeah, I mean, there have been tensions there between those two. I mean, first of all, with the Moreland Commission, Schneiderman was enlisted to deputize some of the members, and then the whole thing fell apart. He caught the flak from that, although he was also criticized himself for, you know, why didn't he speak up and complain?
Sure.
And now with the police brutality cases, I mean, Schneiderman has said he wants the governor to give him the power to investigate some of these, a killing of an unarmed civilian by police. And I'd be surprised if the governor, that's not the governor's style. His style would be to do it himself or set up his own commission.
Sure, you don't want to give somebody else the opportunity to do that. Anyway, Rick Garland, I hate to cut out now. I could go on with this for 2 hours.
You are
so smart and right to the point. But we are out of time. Our guest has been Rick Garland, Capitol reporter for the Albany Times-Union. Rick, you are terrific. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.